people, you're all welcome to today's episode, and I'm your regular host, Gabriel. So on today's show, we have a very special guest, all the way from the United States of America. He's a two-time suicide attempt survivor. Almost 10 years ago, he was deeply buried in prescription pills, and he got addicted to it. He's currently married and lives with his wife. So on today's show, we are going to chat with him, get to know him more, and how he was able to overcome all the addictions that he was facing then. Without wasting much time, let's get into it.
Okay, so can you please introduce yourself to everyone?
Definitely. So my name is Jay Schiffman. I live in South Carolina, a state in the United States, and outside of a town called Charleston. I am an addiction and mental health speaker, writer, consultant, coach, and advocate, and the host of the Choose Your Struggle podcast. And I'm 10 years in recovery from a prescription pill addiction.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, so let's get back into your childhood. How was your childhood like? How was your growing up like?
Yeah, I was super lucky to grow up in a house that I'm the oldest of four boys, and very loving and very supportive. My family was very supportive and loving, we grew up with a vast amount of privilege. I mean, we never wanted for anything, and I was very lucky in that sense, but also very lucky that I had parents who taught us that being good people, being good citizens of the world, is just as, if not more important than being good students and doing well in school and that kind of young age.
Okay. Then your parents did great. You know, it's not everyone who has the parents that you have.
I'm sorry?
I said it's not every parent who provides the care that your parents provide to.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, they made sure we went to the best schools. They made sure that we had opportunities to play sports. You know, I have a brother who is in the works out in Los Angeles in the movie business, and he was into acting from a young age, and they made sure that he had opportunities for that. So, you know, you're definitely right. We were very lucky in that respect.
Okay, great. So, how come the prescription, the pills addiction, how did it all start?
Yeah, so at the time, this was in the 90s, I, like many young boys, especially boys, but some women as well, were prescribed medication for attention hyper deficit disorder, ADHD. And, you know, I wasn't a great student. I couldn't pay attention. I was, you know, a typical rambunctious kid. And in the States at this time, there was a lot of emphasis on trying to force mostly young boys, as I said, but some women as well, to be better students with medication. So I was prescribed medication at a young age, at 11. And it messes up your brain, man. I mean, look, those pills, I'm sure, can help for a lot of people. But for me, we now know that the brain is going through a lot of changes during your teenage years. You know, puberty is a big part of that, but there are a lot of alterations in the brain that go on during these years. And when you add high levels of chemicals to that change, it's only natural that it'll go a little haywire. So I started having some issues in my teenage years. And by the time I was 19, my therapist was saying that I had bipolar disorder, which is a very serious issue of mental health. Yeah. And he put me on medication for that, a lot of medication. By the time I was 19 or 20, I was taking like five or six different medications every day, and I was abusing every single one of them, taking way more than I was supposed to be taking. And I became physically and mentally dependent on these medications. And this led up to the point at 23, where I attempted suicide twice and overdosed.
Okay. So do you think it's because you didn't go according to the medicine, the medication, that's why the suicide and the depression all came inside?
Well, I think it's a mix, right? I mean, as you know, I am sure your listeners, there are a lot of people that do struggle with issues of depression and anxiety. And, you know, these are very real and understandable. You know, I still to this day occasionally have my periods of depression. And, you know, look, we're living, as I'm sure you know, in a very tough time, not only in the world with the coronavirus, but here in the United States with the horrible police brutality that we're seeing against members of the Black community, especially. It's understandable to be feeling certain levels of stress right now. And we don't teach our young people how to handle that stress in a healthy way. We're too quick to say, oh, you're feeling something stressful, let's get you on medication, instead of trying to teach mindfulness and trying to teach that therapy is okay. So I think that it's a combination of both things. You know, it's very normal to feel depressed, but I was treated instead of helping me to work on this myself. My therapist said, here's a bunch of pills.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Okay, so
go ahead.
Okay, no. You were about to say something. Go ahead.
Well, so what I'm curious about, and you, I would love to hear your take on this, is my experience is very American, and there are a lot of people that go through in the U.S. what I go through. How is it in, I mean, is this what you are familiar with in where you are?
Actually, in Ghana here, those who are depressed, they often don't take pills as you guys take pills, you know, because it's hard for people to go to therapist for help because of the prices they charge. And you know, in Ghana here, we are a developing country, so a lot of people don't have insurance to pay for the fees that the psychologists are. So they try to take, most often they use marijuana and alcohol to calm their nerves. So in Ghana here, the main drug they abuse is marijuana and alcohol.
Well, you said something that's very true over here as well, and I want to make this very clear. The U.S., you know, we may call Ghana a developing country and the U.S. a developed country, but it's not that different. You know, it's there are a lot of people here that don't have adequate insurance, and even if they do, therapy is not covered by most insurances. Here's what's awful. There's a law that says it's supposed to be covered, and insurance companies just ignore it. And so it's very hard to find a good therapist who will take insurance. And just like what you were saying, there are a lot of people here that treat their own issues of mental health with alcohol, with other substances, or like kind of my experience, they may go see a therapist every now and then, but it's a lot cheaper to get prescription pills covered. And so they're getting very high levels of these pills prescribed to them, and then they're not seeing anybody. And so there is a huge rate of people who unfortunately are prescribed these mind-altering medications that are very severe on the brain, and look, can be very helpful if done in the right way, but then they're not seeing a therapist. And so you see a large, way too many people who are put on medication and don't understand what's happening in their brain, and then they commit suicide. And it's really sad.
Okay, so I want us to go back a little into your addiction story. Were you combining any other medicine according to any other drugs according to the ones they prescribed that you were overdosing it? Were you taking anything, alcohol or any, were you smoking any other thing?
So I think it would be easier to list the things I wasn't doing than the things I was doing.
Okay, sure. Great.
I'm sorry?
I said that would be great.
Yeah. So I took, yes. I mean, to answer your question, I took everything. I never liked needles. Thankfully, I didn't do heroin or anything like that, but, I'll say it this way. So when you're on as many chemicals as I was on, and you want to party like everybody else does, you can't just have a beer or you know, whatever, because your body is already so full of chemicals. So I was doing a good amount of cocaine. I was drinking, not a lot. I didn't like the way drinking made me feel. So I never really abused alcohol. You know, I was a dumb college kid. So of course I did on occasion, but not really. I was smoking a lot of weed because at the end of the day, I needed something to make me feel better because I was on so many chemicals that if I wanted to come down at the end of the day, that's all I had was smoking. I wasn't taking care of myself. So I wasn't eating well. I wasn't exercising. And so my response was, as you perfectly pointed out, was to use a lot of other drugs as well.
Okay. So when you were going through all those things, did you ever think that you could find help one day?
What a great question. No, I really didn't. And the reason I will say right off the bat that I didn't is that stigma against mental health and addiction is very real. And so I didn't talk about these issues with other people in my life. The only other people who knew how badly I was abusing drugs were all the people I was abusing drugs with. And so it felt very normal because everybody I was with was doing it too. So I would wake up in the morning and immediately start using drugs. And I knew that wasn't okay. But then I would look at all, I was living with like 10 or 11 other people. All of us were abusing together. And so it made me feel normal, which is what I was looking for in the first place. And we were all just, you know, in the same place.
Okay. So how were you able to recover? You know, since you said you never thought you could find help, how come all the change over? How did you turn over the leaf?
Yeah, so it's kind of an interesting story. As I said earlier, I attempted suicide and I overdosed. I spent the night in a hospital going through overdose. And the next morning, I woke up. I came back to consciousness in a different hospital. I had, you know, was so out of it that I had been moved and I didn't even realize it. And I spent 3 weeks in that hospital. And then I was sent to a long-term care facility, what you may call a mental institution. Because at this time, I was still being told that my issue was a mental health issue. And it was there that I started to meet people who had issues of substances as well. And I got to know them and I went, man, you know, what they're going through sounds a lot like what I'm going through. Our issues are very similar. And so I started thinking, well, maybe I don't have an issue of mental health. Maybe I have an issue of substances. So I decided I wanted to get off all of my drugs, right? I made the decision myself. And I checked out of that facility after 3 months. I went to go live with family very far away and spent just 3 months after that doing nothing other than slowly getting off all the drugs I was on. I was on so many different drugs that if I had just stopped completely, I would have died. My body would have gone into detox and I would have died. So it took me 3 months to get off all the drugs, but I finally did. And it took about 5 years for my brain to start catching up with the development that should have happened before and to rebuild itself. And, you know, it thankfully it did. There's still some little things every now and then where I'm like, you know, that's probably a long-term effect from my drug use. But yeah, Overall, it took probably 5 or 6 years.
Oh, that was actually brave, you know, because a lot of people don't just make the move like that. They have to be intrigued by something or someone needs to force them back. In your case, you were able to overcome just like that. It was actually great. So how was the support from the family when you started, how will I put it, when you started to minimize your intake? Because you said you did it gradually. So how was the support from the family and friends?
Well, I'll say this right off the bat. You're asking great questions, so thank you. You know, it was really tough, actually, because a lot of people in my life still – that were close to me, my parents, you know, everyone still believed that I had an issue of mental health. And so I was very lucky that there was one person who said, I believe you, you know, come live with me. And that was my grandmother. And so without her, I don't know where I would have gone. I was, you know, dead set on checking myself out of this place and trying to quit all the drugs. But most people were still believing my therapist, who said that I was very, very mentally ill. So I was very lucky to have my grandmother who said, come here, we'll do this together. And it was hard, man. It was really difficult not having a lot of people in my life who understood what I was going through and believed me when I said that I thought that maybe my therapist was wrong. And, you know, now looking back, it is pretty remarkable that I did this without anyone else besides my grandmother, you know, supporting me. And it makes me very understanding to your point that a lot of people don't, because it was hard. And if I hadn't been so lucky to have my grandmother, you know, I could have been homeless. I could have been, you know, doing all this very much alone. So, you know, I'm very thankful for her, and lucky for me, she knows that we have a fantastic relationship.
Okay, that's a very good one that I had. I said that was a very great grandmother that you had.
Yeah, she's the best. We still talk all the time, and you know, she's my guardian angel.
Okay. So I want us to go back a little before you started to change your mind. Looking back, did you ever do something? The drugs lead you to do something that up to now you still regret doing?
Oof. Man, Gabriel, you're asking all the good questions today. yeah, you know, that's a great question. I don't know if I would say that the drugs made me do things I regret doing, but I will say that 100% it held me back from doing things that I wanted to do. And in that way, yes, 100%. You know, when I was 19 and 20, before I really fell into the deepest level of my struggles with addiction, I was in school, I was going to college. I had jobs. I had some pretty good jobs. I was on a great trajectory. And the addiction just took all that away. You know, by the time I was 23, I wasn't doing anything. I was spending most days on my couch. If I was leaving the house, it was to party or to do something else, you know? So yes, definitely the drugs interrupted my life and it took me, you know, so I entered recovery at 23 and I finally graduated from college, about 3 years later. And it really took me a while to just get back to where I was, you know? And so, I mean, definitely. And I really appreciate that you asked that, because most of the time when I tell my story, that's a piece that people don't really focus on. They really like focusing on the, oh, you made it, you did all these. Yeah, which is true. And I appreciate that as well. But there isn't a lot of focus on tell us about what the drugs took away. And in this case, you know, I can be very clear, it took away a lot.
Okay. So I saw your profile on Facebook and I saw that you studied psychology. Mm-hmm. Were you studying psychology before your incidents or after?
Definitely after. So when I graduated from college, you know, it took me, like I said, a long time. And I went to 4 different universities and I had 6 different majors. And so we had a fun game on my graduation party, who could name all of my majors, and nobody could. I even struggled remembering them all. No, after my experience, I've always been interested in the way we think and why we are the way we are. But after I went through what I went through, it was number one to me, was understanding why we think the way we think. And so, you know, I went and got my degree in psychology. And since then, I've gotten, I think, 5 or 6 different certificates now on ideas around psychology and addiction and mental health first aid and all that kind of stuff. It's so interesting to me. And I think it's so important to say this. We are for the mind right now, where we were in, let's say, 1850 or 1900 for the body, we're still on the cutting edge of this stuff. And we're going to look back in, let's say, even 100 years and go, wow, we knew nothing about the brain back in the year 2000, the year 2020. It's so important to keep pushing these boundaries. And I'll make this analogy. In the early 90s, actually not until about 1980, did the career of the personal coach or the physical coach exist. Until then, what people knew about the body was only coming from their doctors, right? I mean, that was only 30 plus years ago that we understood enough about weightlifting and running and all that kind of stuff, about what we put into our body, that the food advisors was becoming a career. So we're seeing that right now with the mind. Until very recently, everything we understood about how to work in our mind was just from a therapist. You know, there was not anyone out there doing what I'm now lucky enough to do, which is coaching people on mindfulness. And some of the things that we're taking away from the therapist profession, I'm not saying I want to replace your therapist. I believe that everyone, you know, I'm very lucky to have a good relationship with a therapist. Actually, in the last year, I've seen three different ones because I think it's so important to have different therapists for different aspects of what you want to do with your mental health. But I also think that if you're using your time with your therapist to talk about mindfulness, then you're not getting to the deeper issues. And so that's where people like me come in. Let's work together on those issues so that when you go talk to your therapist, you can talk about the real stuff.
Okay, that's a really great program that you are running. Because
Thank you. A lot
of people who are able to overcome, they feel too shy to even come out and express what they went through and all those things. So you are actually doing a great job. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Well, and that's, thank you for saying that. I think it's so important. Anyone who goes through any issue of mental health or addiction should tell their story, because we have this idea that it doesn't happen to everybody, that you have to be weak or, I don't know, all that BS, you know what I mean? So it's so important for people to tell their story so that somebody can go up to you and say, you know, I've never really told anyone this, but, and that happens to me all the time. You know, people come up to me and say, you know, I've never really told anyone, but my struggles are this and this and this. And they feel like they can't talk about it. But then when they hear me talk about it in casual conversation, they go, oh, wow, maybe I can talk about this. And so we have to end that stigma. And the only way we can do that is by people telling their stories.
Oh, okay. Good. So earlier you said you were overdosing with a lot of friends. So where are those friends right now? Right now, as you are speaking, where are all of them?
Yeah, so it's funny you asked that. My podcast, which I'll give a quick shout out to, Choose Your Struggle podcast. You can find it anywhere you get your podcast. Sure. My guest this week is a guy that I was using with. He's done amazing things. He's now a well-known musician living in New Zealand. His name is Hoodie Time, HODYTIME. You can find him anywhere that you listen to your music, Spotify, Apple, all that kind of stuff. He and I go way back. We met in middle school, and we reconnected at this time, and we were using together and partying all the time together, and we both ended up in rehab separately and then reconnected a couple years ago. And you know, he's a great guy, and we're both very lucky to have overcome what we were doing. I don't live in the same city I did back then, but when I'm home, I bumped into a couple of those people. I don't know where most of them are. I was living with, they were my friends at the time, but you know, that sort of environment, our friendship was really based on unhealthy parts of our life. And so I still love it when I see them. You know, one of the guys I bumped into, I was at an event and he was working the event, and we kind of went off to the corner and had a little heart to heart, and it was so good to see him. But you know, it's very rare when I see most of those people, because unfortunately a lot of them, you know, weren't as lucky as I was to be able to make it to where I've been able to make it to. And you know, I recognize how lucky that makes me.
So why did you choose to become an advocate?
Great question. You know, I, as I was saying earlier, look, we are so far behind where we should be when it comes to helping people with issues of mental health and addiction. At least in the US, and it sounds like this is very similar in Ghana, we aren't even talking about these issues enough, you know? And here in the US, when you try to talk about this in the wrong places, people tell you, oh, we don't want to talk about that, or it's not polite to talk about that. Well, that's ridiculous, you know? Why is it that my aunt who's struggling, you know, she's going through cancer, and she is incredibly brave and she's kicking it, you know, she's doing a great job. Why is it that we can talk about that, but if I want to talk about what I went through, it's, no, we don't talk about that. That needs to change. And I am so tired of watching people I know die just from issues that we can stop. In the US, over 100,000 people die every year just from overdose and suicide. 100,000, that's how many people have recently died from the coronavirus, and that's on the front page of all of our newspapers, and it should be. It's terrible. Why aren't we feeling that same way about these issues of addiction and mental health? So that's why I do what I do, because those deaths are preventable.
Okay. What you said was actually, it's great, you know, because it's a global issue. A lot of time we keep a blind eye on mental health issues. We think, oh, it's normal. But actually the suicide, as you said, a lot of them could have been prevented, you know. But we tend to give a blind eye to all those things and we think, oh, suicide should go away. But look at the coronavirus. Look, every front page, globally, they've even made a website where they keep all the people who have died and all those things, but they could have done similar thing for mental health issues. So I think that was a great point to raise right there.
Yeah, and that's why, again, it's so important, you know, people like you, man, that are bringing these issues, you know, making people focus on it. Because if you keep talking about it and you keep telling your story and you keep making people like me come here and talk about it, then they have to confront these issues. And at some point, there will be enough drive for change that people will say, we have to do something about this.
Sure. So according to a little research I did, a lot of psychologists, they say most of the time people who go through depression and all those drug addicts, sorry to use that, and if it's too harsh on me, a lot of them have family issues of like family background of depression or addiction. In your family, do you have something like that?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and you're definitely right. I mean, it is, we used to think that drug issues of addiction had nothing to do with mental health. And we've now learned, thankfully, that most, if not all, people who struggle with issues of addiction also have underlying issues of mental health. Now, I don't know, you know, it would be easy for me to say, okay, well, you know, one of my brothers goes through this and my mom, you know, what I don't know is how uncommon that is, because so many people these days struggle with anxiety. So many people these days struggle with depression. I will say that my mother's grandfather was a brilliant, brilliant man, but he had schizophrenia. And that was something that we didn't really talk about when I was young. You know, we knew that our great grandfather was kind of out there, and we knew some funny stories about him, but we didn't know what that was. And now we talk about this openly. So would it have changed my story if I knew that? I don't know. But do I wish we would have talked about it more? Definitely.
Okay. That's very great to know. That's a very good story, you know, because it's something that parents need to make their children aware of. A lot of time they think you are too young to know this, to know that. But actually, if they could have shared that issue with you, it could have helped you in diverse ways. That's something that parents need to be aware of. So that's a very great point to raise there.
Thank you.
So since you are an advocate and there are a lot of people listening to this podcast,
I just started recently, but I know gradually the followers will keep coming. So I want you to use, let's say, a minute or two. Someone listening to this podcast right now, going through serious drug use, you think there's no way you can make it. What would you tell that person?
Great question. So there's two things that I always say when asked this, and that's number one, reach out. There are people who care. There are people that will help you. There are people that love you. I've only known you for a little bit, man, but I can already tell that you're one of those people. You know, it's not a thing that you should suffer in silence. I wish someone had said that to me when I was going through what I was going through. Like I said earlier, I knew that I was struggling. I didn't know where to look, and it took me almost dying to get the help that I needed. So number one, reach out to someone. Just start the conversation. And if that means reaching out to me, you know, you can definitely do so. I would love to chat. If it means reaching out to you, man, like just do it. Just reach out. So that's number one. Number two, look, I wish I could be the type of person, or maybe I don't actually wish this, but who will tell you it's okay, it's going to be easy. No. It's going to be really hard to make a change. It is not a thing that you can just wake up tomorrow and go, I'm going to be better. I mean, look, I wish that was the case, but it's just not. Know this. Relapse happens. Struggle happens. But you can do it. I am proof of that. You know, like I said earlier in my story, I was on so many different medications that if I had stopped, I would have died. That's not me saying that. That is the doctors I was seeing at the time. I was on one medication that is so severe that if you come into a treatment center on that medication and heroin, they get you off the heroin first because it's easier. It is going to be hard, but you can do it. And trust me, it is better on the other side. So that's number two. And then very quickly, there are many ways to be in recovery. For some people, that means being completely sober. For some people, it means just not using the issue, the things that were causing you to use unhealthily. It is important to figure out the right way into recovery for you. And a good medical professional will help you figure that out. Yes, when you first start off, I advocate going completely sober because your body needs time to heal. But after that, if you work with the right people, you can learn, okay, maybe you can have coffee. Maybe you can have, you know, I don't know, name a sugar. I mean, these are things that a lot of people will say, if you want to be truly sober, you shouldn't have any of that stuff. And that's true for a lot of people. It's important to work with someone who sees you as an individual and will treat you as an individual and not just tell you, here are the hard and fast rules you have to follow, because maybe that's not true for you. Or maybe you actually need to go a little bit farther for a while. So make sure you're working with someone who sees you as an individual and treats you as an individual.
Okay. So to wrap it up, I want you to share with us life after drug abuse. How do you feel now as compared to those times you were using?
Yeah, so I will definitely say, you know, there's a saying in recovery that says, I wouldn't trade my best day in using for my worst day in recovery. And that is complete and total BS. I loved a lot of what I was doing when I was using, but don't get me wrong, as a whole, my life is so much better now that I'm no longer struggling. I get to have awesome conversations like this that would not have happened 10 years ago when I was struggling. I'm married and my wife is so supportive and I love her very much. I get to do all these wonderful things in my life that I would not have been able to do if I was struggling. And more importantly, I feel better. I feel more free and my thinking is clear and I get to make the choices that I want to make. At the time, my only struggle was to get out of bed, to get off the couch, and to try to avoid withdrawals. Now I get to choose what I struggle for because I don't have to worry about that stuff anymore. It makes all the difference in the world. And like I said earlier, you can do it. It's going to be hard, but you can do it.
Okay. So if someone is listening to this right now and wants to reach out to you, where can they get in touch with you?
Yep. So number one, you can find me at my website, www.jayshiffman.com. And that's JayShiffman.com. You can find me on Facebook or LinkedIn at Jay Shiffman. You can find me on Instagram at The Next Shiffman, on Twitter at JB Shiffman. And the podcast is Choose Your Struggle. And you can find that wherever you get your podcast.
Okay. So what are your final words?
Yeah, my final words are, first off, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. It's awesome to talk to you. Thank you for what you're doing. Don't stop. Keep it up. You know, we need more people like you out there telling these stories. And, you know, I definitely encourage you to keep working hard, because you're on a cool path, and I appreciate it. And like I said earlier, I cannot say this enough. Reach out, whether it's to me, whether it's to my incredible host today, or anyone else in your life that you know will listen. You do not have to struggle alone. You can do this. It's important to reach out.
Okay, so Jay, thanks a lot for making time today, because it's not everyone who make time out of their busy schedule to just listen to, for people to listen to what you went through and how you overcame it. So I want to say I'm really grateful, and I hope to hear from you soon. We'll keep in touch.
Definitely. And you know, you reach out too, man. Add me on all those social media, and let's stay in touch.
Okay, sure. So bye. My regards to your wife.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I believe you really got inspired. One lesson that I really took from today's episode is that no matter how deep or how serious your problem is, there's always a solution. All you need to do is to reach out to people. It might feel bad, you might feel weak, but actually it's a sign of confidence to ask for help. If you don't ask people, there's no way they will be able to know what is wrong with you. You opening up to them will open a whole new gate for solutions. It might feel bad, as I said, but it's the right thing to do. And as usual, I want you all to stay safe and stay blessed. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.